What does a state poet laureate do? Well, the answer to that varies widely from state to state, but at the heart of it is a celebration of people and place through the art form. Currently, all but 5 states have their own poet laureate positions, and a history of each can be found on the Library of Congress website. Today, New Letters on the Air, produced by New Letters Magazine at UMKC, features Kansas Poets Laureate, past and present, with 5 of the 6 who have served since the position was established in 2004 in a reading sponsored by the Kansas Area Watershed Council. The Call Council, as it's known, publishes the Kansa Journal, which has works by earlier Poets Laureate Karen Miriam Goldberg and Denise Lowe, who will be heard in our next show. Today's first half begins with current Kansas Poet Laureate Kevin Rabus, appointed in 2017. The author of 9 books, he teaches at Emporia State University and often writes for Jazz Ambassador magazine. He starts with a poem from the 2010 Kansas Notable book, Lisa's Flying Electric Piano, winner of the Nelson Poetry Book Award. I'm Angela Elam, and here's Kevin Rabus.
I'm going to start with some poems that are from the past. This first one is called Fall Up, and it's about kind of an ordinary experience that came to be extraordinary, and that's my theme of my talks that I've been giving across Kansas. So this is Fall Up. Gunkle and I had this big mirror between us, hefting it into the back of his blue pickup truck. Gunkle's real slow, a giant in blue jeans and green Crocs, wearing a white t-shirt with battery acid on it. His glasses are thicker than my thumb. So we grab hold of this monster mirror, and it glints. We both look into that mirror, noticing the clarity of that blue sky and those green sycamore leaves reflected so perfectly. It appears you could just dive on into that mirror and sink into the sky. And we think the same thing. You could fall up, Gunkle says, and just keep on falling. Nothing would stop you. And that was the way of it. Gunkle's mind was now my mind, and I was in that mirror falling on up through those white smoke clouds headed towards an orange sun. Gunkle and I stacked box bed springs on top of that mirror and some branches from out front, and I could hear that large mirror crack, but I think Gunkle and I could still see it, that vision of sinking into sky, drowning with only the sun to hold us up. Thanks. Thanks. As I've been traveling, I've gotten to stop in a lot of towns. My people are from around Lake Wilson, Lucas Luray, Russell area. And this one's set in Stafford, Kansas, another small town. And it's called At the Curtis Cafe. And it's after a Viejo poem that starts out, I will die in Paris on a rainy day, something like that. This is my response to that. What would my death and the afterlife be like for me, perhaps? And it's a little bit zany. When I die, I'll rise in a small town diner with the seat that faces the main street window, and all of the silverware and water glasses and tabletops will shine with afternoon light, and I will know no one who comes in through the front door and sits and eats. We will all watch the street lamps illuminate the uneven brick street and wait for afternoon to pass on into evening, full of shadows, jagged and irregular, the street filling up with darkness in the way coffee fills up a pale coffee cup. I did used to play jazz in Kansas City. I almost paid my rent as a jazz musician for a time. I worked at a jazz archive too, mainly shelving records and finding them for folks. And this one has some of that jazzy stuff in it from gigging out. I still play a little bit. So this is called Night Shirts That Shimmer to Dinner. And when the annulment papers came in the mail, no word from her in years, I knew she must have lived and lived and lived on the blocks I once wandered and walked and knew, danced with the men in the clubs or danced while they played in the background, floated dollar bills across bars to other friends, had talks with musicians, her and her large father, who had enough cash for all of Belton and said, yeah, that's some jazz. That's some real jazz we heard tonight. And I turned and left the restaurant once during my new wife's office party, left the club, noticing him in the back row waiting, talking with the women who wear nightshirts that shimmer to dinner. the club where I'd stop by to say hey and set in and catch up on my old life, now their life, in the back rows, watching, listening, never knowing why we played for their pay. But in the barely lit hours and the hours of darkness only neon can light, I too lived hours no one can repeat, in parts of town and run-down corners, where music moves in the building as blood moves in the body, and women can dance however they please, and a man can stand up and know anything his spirit can muster, can know the chord changes with his heart, and know the bar top and the saxophone face, and the drum head and the cymbal dish, and the touch of brushes when they are new, cat paw on Spanish tile quick, delicate as the teardrops, the sensitive get on the heart finger, the ring finger, mine. Thanks. So we'll do something a little bit happier after that. This one is about when I was helping Lisa, who I'm married to, luckily, move her electric piano, and things went amiss. So this is called Lisa's Flying Electric Piano. Her full-size electric piano flew out of my father's pickup truck. I was driving. Somehow the bass detached from the keyboard, and it all went flying into the busy intersection of 47th and Main. No one hit it, and Lisa said, "Let's just throw it into this dumpster," when we had carried it out of the road. "No," I said, "let's take it to your new apartment," and we did. When I turned it on, the power eye glowed red but did not play. The next day I found the volume slider and turned it up, and it played perfectly. Aside from the scrapes from the road on its key cover, it was fine. I practiced tying knots, roping things down, and I dreamt at last of turning corners slow and of a keyboard rising in flight and floating across town, playing a well-known sonata as it flew. Yeah. And that's true. If you get a Roland electric piano, that's the kind. It will take a licking and keep on ticking. We still have it. Some of the keys don't come up anymore, but besides that, it's good. I'll read a newer poem. My sister and I were very, very shy, and so my mother thought the solution to this was to make us into performers. And so she enrolled us in a magic club, and we took lessons to become kid magicians. And this did beat mowing lawns, but it was nerve-wracking. And one of the first places they took us to perform was a jail. And so here we go. This is called Jail Show. Blind Clam takes our group of kid magicians to the county jail, where we will thumb cuff each other and demonstrate escapes, our hands undone, fast as metal clasps can click. "Show me how to do that, kid," says a guy on the inside. "Can't," we say, "it's part of the trick." "Magician's code," he says. "Yes, okay, kid, that I understand." So this is the last one I'll read of mine. I used to play in church praise bands, which are the contemporary praise music of our era. They're beautiful and strange and wonderful, and so I'll read you one from that time in my life. Not that traditional. Band leader Doris says, "The minister says she wants our services to have a more traditional feel." And I know what she means. No drums, or drums set to a Sousa march, or worse, tap, tap, tap brushes on a hi-hat, or one big brush circle swish on snare, sound of the turntable arms cycling, idling on the LP's inner ring, monotony of background click, nothing doing. And so I say, "Traditional, traditional. You mean like we get a goat and sacrifice it on an altar and raise the burnt offerings to the heavens?" And Dora says, "Not that traditional." All right. I'll introduce Eric McHenry with a poem by him that I really love, an early but goodie, kind of a struggle of the artist poem called Rebuilding Year by Eric McHenry. After Beloit, I went back to the paper and wrote art features for $8 an hour and lived in the gym building on the block between Topeka High with its Gothic tower and the disheveled state house with its green dome of oxidizing copper. I was sorry that I had no view of Old First National. Something obscured it from an inset balcony. I heard it imploding, though, like Kansas Avenue clearing its throat, and saw the gaudy brown dust edifice that went up when it came down. Friday nights I walked into High's home games and sat high in the bleachers and tried to look like a self-knowing new student and tried not to see my teachers and picked out players with familiar names and told them what to do. There's one by Eric McHenry. He's next.
Kevin Rabus, the current Kansas Poet Laureate. He read from several of his 9 books, including All That Jazz and Bird's Horn and other poems, and ended with Eric McHenry's Rebuilding Year, published in the New Republic. You're listening to New Letters on the Air. Eric McHenry was the Kansas Poet Laureate 2015-17. A native of Topeka, he teaches in the Kansas capital at Washburn University, but lives with his wife and 2 children in nearby Lawrence, home of the University of Kansas. His 3 poetry books range from Pot Scrubber Lullabies, winner of the 2007 Kate Tufts Discovery Award, to his 2016 Odd Evening. Here's Eric McHenry.
Thanks, Kevin, for that fantastic reading, and thank you for including a poem of mine in it. Thank you, Kaw Council, and thanks to all my fellow poets laureate who have been such a source of support and inspiration for me. And also, darn you, Kevin, for being so funny. Now I'm realizing mine are going to be really underwhelming after that. So feel free to pretend that these are funny as well. No nose. We like to stand in our front yard sometimes and irritably regard the house, specifically an odd expanse of featureless facade where something, we agree, should go. Some jetty porch or portico, because the synthesizing eye expects it and is bothered by its absence. Our house has no nose. And yet this was the house we chose. Why? We say the neighborhood, the trees are old, the schools are good, etc., and curb appeal is realty, which isn't real. But you suspect the metaphor itself is what we've settled for. We want a house that doesn't meet the beauty standards of its street. A child is going to outgrow her features here, and we don't know what aspect she'll assume or whose, only that she won't get to choose. And when she rubs a little space on the fogged mirror for her face and leans in skeptically, and sees familiar asymmetries, my off-plumb jaw, your errant nose. She needs to be at home in those. Thank you. Here's a Lawrence poem. This is sort of a departure for me stylistically. I don't know if it even is a poem. We'll find out, I guess. This is called Tub Thumping. Remember when you asked me for a ride to Lawrence because you wanted to spend Thanksgiving break with your other boyfriend, and I was going that way anyway? This had to be 1992. He was from high school, and you weren't done breaking up with him. You never lied to either of us. You reminded me of that. I walk a lot now, and the other day I looked up and recognized the frat you and your duffel bag disappeared into. I know you have bad memories of here, and not of him, of the half year you spent waiting for grad school, waiting tables, waiting for me to come home from work. But I'd stopped at Centennial Park to play disc golf again and left you waiting for dark, then in the dark, in a town in which you knew no one but me and 2 aggressively Christian couples and that old boyfriend, who was now, of course, a cub reporter for 49 News Source and could be counted on to appear in our apartment at about 5:10. Now I live 2 blocks from Centennial. I used to throw the old discs with my son until last summer when I ruptured one on the tee pad of the 11th hole. That's why I'm walking so much. I can't run. They got the inflammation under control with a couple of cortisone shots, but now the sole of my left foot is permanently numb. You might be thinking, karma. You'd be entitled to. But life isn't obvious, and neither are you. You used to say some petty things, then call them petty, which the petty never do. I came to you directly from my parents, pretty much, which meant I had to learn that love was another thing I had to earn, and that even kindness could be difficult. Thank you. I do hope you've forgiven Lawrence. It's a great town, and I was not its fault. I'm glad you were precisely who you were, and not somebody I could just annex. I feel like a lot of things in this poem aren't going to make sense because they're true. We'd broken up for the last time we got into bed together. It was like one of those artificially complex story problems from the GRE. Friend's wedding, you and me and another couple who were still a couple, motel room with a pair of queens to be split three ways among four people. And you were already with the guy you'd marry eventually, but for some reason he wasn't there. Love and Chumbawamba were in the air. And we were both a little drunk, I'm sure. And because it was the only thing to do, we slid familiarly under the covers and slept it off, chastely, not taking care not to face each other, a buffer of trust between us that we must have acquired somewhere. Oh, thank you. Share a few from my book, Odd Evening. And one that I adore by Wyatt Townley, and then I'll let her do her amazing thing. Here's one I don't read so often. It's called At the Baptist Mission. The Old Stone School and Mission that's next to the Kansas Museum of History in Topeka that was built in the 1840s. The first missionary there was Robert Simmerwell, who was my four greats grandfather. And one of the things that he did was translate portions of the Bible into a phonetic, pronounceable simulacrum of the Potawatomi language, I guess. An interesting and complicated figure, and this is a complicated ancestry that I have and that we all have, I suppose. I was wrangling with all that when I wrote this poem. It's really a poem of the imagination, not so much a poem of history, but the knowledge of that he had done that, and then some quick research and the realization that there are very, very few living speakers of the Potawatomi language that sort of provoked this poem. At the Baptist Mission. In your translation, you relieved the Bible of its possessive case because you knew that ownership had no place in the tribal vernacular, although that isn't true. It's true that they relieved you of your tense and maybe one possessive when you died. They didn't like significant events estranging names from what they signified. According to the 1820 census, no one was here. A bison understands the need for new translations because sense is a property and properties change hands. According to one of the 17 surviving speakers, you were fair and good. She said your honorary name might mean prayed slowly or believed he understood. Finish with a short one here. This is about something that happened when my son was 4 or 5 years old. A seemingly insignificant thing at the time. We were living in Seattle. I was in our house. He was playing in the backyard. I was sort of keeping an eye on him. And at one point he walked by a window and looked in, and we saw each other through the window, and we were only a few feet apart. But there was something odd about that being a mediated encounter, and I wrestled with it for quite a while and eventually ended up with this poem called Apparent. That's one word, apparent, but you're invited to hear it both ways, I suppose. If it had been an open window, you would have kept walking. But because it was sun-puzzled glass you saw me through, you stopped halfway across the yard and squinted through the glare and waved and seemed to wait for something else to happen. And finally, it became apparent that it had already, and that you were being kept from what you'd been about to do by nothing. And you gave me one more gentle wave, I'm here, you're there, and left me in my frame. So Wyatt knows that I have a rare condition found only in poets called villanelle envy. Dylan Thomas wrote Do Not Go Gentle into that good night, and Elizabeth Bishop wrote One Art, and Theodore Retke wrote The Waking, and Auden wrote that one that he kept changing the title of, and Sylvia Plath wrote Mad Girl's Love Song. Nobody is known for more than one villanelle, as far as I know. And Wyatt managed a perfect one, so I'm going to share it with you, and then Wyatt will share some more of her poetry. The Fountain. The fountain rises from a deeper place and thrusts its liquid spear into the air, then turns to fall with death-defying grace. But when we fall, we struggle to save face and make our way with ever greater care. The fountain rises from a deeper place, like the gymnast hurtling into space, who wraps around the trapeze in mid-air, then turns to fall with death-defying grace. The falling and the rising interlace. It's fear that holds us back from going there. The fountain rises from a deeper place. It's only life. Summer will replace what spring has cost. The tree will drop its pear, then turn in fall with death-defying grace. And so we fall into a hard embrace and push our hips together in a prayer. The fountain rises from a deeper place, then turns to fall with death-defying grace. Thanks, everybody.
Eric McHenry, the fifth Poet Laureate of Kansas, who headed up the 2017 Brooks Fest, a Gwendolyn Brooks centennial celebration, another poet born in Topeka, Kansas. He read poems from his 2016 collection, Odd Evening, and ended with The Fountain by Wyatt Townley, Kansas Poet Laureate from 2013 to 15. Her five books include three poetry collections, with another coming out later in 2018. Here's more from her 2012 Kansas notable book, The Afterlife of Trees, which also won the Nelson Poetry Book Award. You're listening to New Letters on the Air, and here's Wyatt Townley.
It's a great honor to be here with you, and I want to thank the Kaw Council and Karen for putting this together, and the Poets Laureate and Eric for such a very fine rendition of my, God, I hope it's not my only villanelle. I've got a bunch. I love them. I'm in love with this form. I'm not going to read any tonight, but you know, I like to prepare thematically for readings. And so before I do a reading, I ask myself, well, what do I need? And I'm thinking pretty much any choice will hit home with others. So I've been needing a through line amid a turbulent, shifting landscape politically, physically, professionally. What's the through line? And for me, that's love and art. It's, in a sense, really the same reflex. And as writers and as readers, we turn to the page in difficult times. I found I had to limit my exposure to the news in the last while to keep afloat and also to keep from drowning and from being, oh, I see a lot of nodding, from being drowned out. If it bleeds, it leads, right? Or worse. So we have to keep asking, what is news? And where is news? The news. Waves broke their stories on the shore, then covered up everything they wrote as I napped all day in a deck chair. Phones rang in empty rooms. The paper lay curled on the table while history was made over and over. The waves rewrote and erased themselves like dreams on waking. All that's left are my 2 feet dripping with news. So we make our own news, and for some of us here, that's a poem. And poems are everywhere around us, just as beauty is everywhere around us. It's point of view, isn't it? And always poetry. This is called The Poem. The poem waits on your pillow and in your shoes each morning. Behind the drapes you draw, it's on the empty swing set that flanks the frozen creek. It's the towel that dries your face. It follows you around the house like a pull toy, from stove to chair and out to the mailbox where nothing has arrived. It bumps up every blessed stair. It's on the phone, which is for you. It's in the coffee you drink and the ink you arrange on the page, in the wood before the paper, the earth that clutched the tree that grew to fill a sky where snow falls onto shapes of things you once made but can't get your arms around anymore, where it also is. There is nowhere it hasn't got to. In the unsold seats and the space between tables, where words mix like smoke between this breath and the next, in the blood that runs around the one block of the body again and again and keeps coming back to knock at the door where someone hands you an envelope. That is also it saying yes. Yes. Are you familiar with The Course in Miracles? It basically reduces everything to essentially two things, love and fear. So we live in one of two domains. And when we are in love, we have no fear. And when we're feeling fear, we don't have access to love. And so, wow, right? And so behind one fear is, when we're in fear, another fear, another fear. It's pentimento of fear, right? But at the end of fear is something wonderful. The swing. A line branches out between your eyebrows. It is the tree of cares. Climb it and look down. From here, everything looks smaller. This is the place where you fall in the dream, where the tiger enters, where the curtain goes up, and you have on no clothes. Look. There, behind the actor, the tiger, the crack in the drive, another appears on cue. Behind the last fear is an empty swing. I'll finish with this, called Quitting Time. The actors scrub their faces and go home. The cook unties the apron. The crook puts down the gun. Everywhere people are stepping out of their shoes, setting down their backpacks. Briefcases line the cornfields, piles of jackets and ties and upturned high heels. Stop the car. Get out. Get off the phone. You're being called. Empty your hands. When the diving board ends, keep singing. Thanks.
Former Kansas Poet Laureate Wyatt Townley reading Quitting Time from her forthcoming 2018 book, Rewriting the Body. She introduces part two of Kansas Poets Laureate, past and present, in an upcoming show with earlier holders of the post, Karen Miriam Goldberg and Denise Lowe, all recorded in a November 2017 reading sponsored by the Call Council. For links, visit newletters.org. From New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, today's show was produced with Danny Reeves, Marissa Reddick, Dylan Cramhorn, Cedric Hurt, and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.